Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. We have a short audio today, 10 verses, Numbers 15, verses 32 through 41. We're going to talk about a Sabbath breaker being executed, and we're going to talk about blue tassels on the robes of the Israelites. Our context is this. In the first 31 verses of chapter 15, we looked at various laws concerning sacrifices, burnt offerings, and peace offerings, covering certain unintentional sins, both of the whole congregation or an individual. So now we start in Numbers 15, verses 32 through 36. Now, while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation, and they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp." So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Now, while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, it says in verse 32, which wilderness is that? That's the wilderness of Paran. Assuming this account is given in chronological order, you recall the spies came back and gave the bad report. Right at the northern edge of the wilderness of Paran, right at the southern edge of the wilderness of Zin, halfway up the Arabah rift between the Dead and the Red Sea being the Gulf of Aqaba. That's approximately where they are. Now, Jewish rabbis, interestingly enough, say that this is not chronological. This happened right after the giving of the law in the Sinai wilderness further to the south. I don't know why they would say that. But at any rate, this stoning of the Sabbath breaker shows that the Sabbath law, at least that Sabbath law, was implemented and enforced in the wilderness. And I assume all the laws were, except for the ones concerning first fruits and stuff that involved growing crops, which they couldn't do in the wilderness. Although people will debate that. Now, the people who found this man gathering wood on Saturday brought the man to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation. Obviously, that can't be 2 million people or 603,550 men over 20. It probably refers to the 70 elders who had been chosen, if you recall. In Exodus 24:1, then he, that's Yahweh, said to Moses, "Go up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, Aaron's sons, and 70 of Israel's elders, and bow in worship at a distance." That was when I was talking about on one of the trips up to Mount Sinai. 70 of Israel's elders, so they were kind of a set group of 70. There were lots of other elders too, leaders in Israel, but there were 70 special elders. And so Moses, Aaron, and the leaders of Israel, the 70 elders, were all united in executing the death penalty. Well, they eventually came to that decision. At first, though, they had to go consult with God. As in verse 35, the Lord said to Moses, and that's probably at the door of the tent of the meeting or maybe in the Holy of Holies, but well, let's read how God spoke to Moses. Exodus 25:22. "There I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel." God is going to speak from on top of the ark, but that could refer to the fact that God spoke with the inner veil, the second veil next to the Holy of Holies, and between the Holy of Holies and the holy place, and then the outer veil that went out from the holy place into the courtyard. Those two veils could have been open, and Moses could have been standing at the doorway, because I don't think that normally Moses would go into the Holy of Holies. John Gill says it's in the Holy of Holies, but where it was, God is speaking to Moses face to face as he normally did. Now, the decision by Moses and Aaron and the leaders of Israel was to put him to death, and that's because the penalty for breaking the Sabbath was death. Exodus 31:15 says this, "For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death." Exodus 35:2, "For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day you shall have a holy day, a Sabbath of complete rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death." So the law is very clear. You work on Saturday, you die. Pretty severe, but that was the sign of the covenant, and all of God's guys were severe here. At the outset of the covenant, there was a bunch of non-believing Jews who were rebellious against God, and the law had to be very, very strict, and it was. And the fact that the elders eventually decided to put him to death shows that the crime was probably not done out of ignorance, but was probably done with a high hand, defiantly. as in, I don't care what you say, God. I'm going to gather some wood. I'm going to make me a fire. I don't care anything about your Sabbath. And God says, oh, no, you're not going to get away with that. Well, the scriptures are clear. So why the indecision over what to do with them? Why did they have to keep him in custody there for a while? Because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Why did they have to go to the Lord and have a special talk with God? Why didn't they just say, well, the law's clear, let's execute him? Well, there's some possible reasons for that. Here's option number one from John Gill. The law didn't say what kind of execution, stoning, burning. They had to decide. So maybe they were discussing that. Option number two, this is again from John Gill. Maybe it was a matter of doubt if gathering of sticks was a violation of the Sabbath. Or, if it was a violation, was it a violation severe enough to warrant death? Moses and Aaron and the elders decided it was a violation of the Sabbath, but that might not have been immediately clear until the Lord spoke to them. And I'm sure they had to look at intent, too. Did they go out there deliberately trying to break the Sabbath, or were they ignorant of the law and thought, well, gathering sticks, that's not really work, is it? Jabez, Fawcett, and Brown give another reason why the indecision was there. Should we execute this man or not? But this was the first public offense of Sabbath breaking. And so they didn't have any precedent. Now, because it was the first public offense, it was decided that there needed to be a sanction here, because a sanction from God and a sanction from Moses against Sabbath breaking, so that there would be no ground of complaint. Why did you execute? Well, if anybody complained to the elders or to Aaron, they say, hey, Moses said to do it, and God told Moses to do it. That's the end of the story. So this was going to be an object lesson for all Israelites in the future, this Sabbath breaking, and that's why it had to be serious, death. But as to why the indecision was there, it was because this was the first time it had ever come up. They had to decide, do we really want to execute this guy? And that's the fourth reason why there might have been indecision over what to do with him, because there's always a natural reticence to execute somebody. They've got to be clear and convincing reasons to do it. So I don't see any surprise in the fact that they took a while to execute the guy. Better to be slow and safe rather than to be too quick and sorry and execute someone wrongly. Now verse 36 says, so all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. I read you those commands in Exodus 31 and Exodus 35. Those were the commands to Moses. 6 days of work, seventh day. He breaks the Sabbath, he should be put to death. Adam Clark says that this violation was no doubt a high-handed violation of the Sabbath. Some translations have a defiant act of the Sabbath. And the context helps us see that this was high-handed, not negligent, because in the passage right before our passage here, in Numbers 15:30, we read this. But the person who acts defiantly, that's with a high hand, whether native or foreign resident, blasphemes the Lord. That person is to be cut off from his people. Now that verse is referring to sins in general, not for a particular sin. So just in general, you act defiantly against God and the punishment's death. You don't mess with God. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown said that this stick gathering was done with, quote, unblushing boldness in broad daylight and open defiance of divine authority. And I think that helps explain the death penalty here. Now we go to Numbers 15, verses 37 through 41, and we'll finish up this short audio. The Lord also spoke to Moses. This is a different topic. This is the blue these are the two blue tassel verses. The Lord also spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and tell them that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and that they shall put on the tassel of each corner a cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord so as to do them and not follow after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy to your God. Of course, playing the harlot means to go after something spiritually, an idol. Doesn't mean to go into prostitutes. Verse 41, I am the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. Now it says the sons of Israel are to wear these blue tassels, verse 38, and that means the priests, the Levites, the proselytes, the freed servants. As John Gill says, well, who wasn't going to wear these tassels? Women and children and Gentiles, non-Israelites. Now, what's the purpose of the blue tassels? Well, before I get into that, let's talk about what these blue tassels were. There is a translation problem here. Some translations translate tassels as fringe. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says this concerning that. Fringe is the English rendering of two distinct Hebrew words, the one meaning a narrow lappet or edging called the hem or border, which in order to make it more attractive to the eye and consequently more serviceable, was covered with a ribbon of blue or rather purple color. Now the other Hebrew term signifies strings with tassels at the end, fastened to the corners of the garment. Well, we can see that some translations take one word and some take the other. It seems, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, that the two distinct words would be very easy to distinguish them, and so the translations would be consistent, but apparently it's not, because I don't know Hebrew. So it's either fringe or tassel. Now, the King James and the Young's Little Translation has fringe. If you take it as fringe, you would say this, that there will be fringe on the corners or the edges of their garments throughout their generations, and they shall put on the fringe a cord of blue. So you got a nice purple or blue band around the bottom of, I guess it's a white robe, and then you put cord of blue hanging off that fringe. Or you can have a tassel that's hanging off the corner or the edges of the garment, and there's a cord of blue attaching the tassel to the garment. Well, I'm not going to get into the sartorial distinctions that might be present here because I really don't care. Let's just take it as tassel, as the NASB has it, and as the Holman Christian Study Bible has it. What's the purpose of these tassels? The NIV Study Bible says, as one walked, the tassels would swish, thus serving as memory prods. Well, my question to that is, well, how are swishing tassels memory prods? What do they remind you of when you see a tassel swishing? You know, a swishing tassel doesn't mean a thing to me. Well, what this means is the tassels didn't mean anything until they were put on the clothes, and then they were invested with significance by this law that we just read. The law that says it shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and to be obedient and don't play the harlot and so forth. Well, that's why the tassels reminded the Israelites, because of this law. The law invests the tassel with a specific meaning. Don't rebel against God's law, against His word. Adam Clark backs me up on that and says this, quote, that there was any analogy between a fringe or a tassel and a precept, it would be bold to assert. In other words, there's no connection between the piece of cloth and a law. No connection at all. But when a thing is appointed to represent another, i.e. as this verse does, this verse appoints the tassel to represent the law, no matter how different the tassel is from the law, that first object, the tassel, becomes the regular representative or sign of the other object, and the other object being the law. Now it's certain that these blue tassels were worn by the Pharisees, Matthew 23, verse 5, but they, the Pharisees, do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments so everybody can see them. Ah, we love the law. Notice, however, that the tassels themselves were not blue, as the cords that attached themselves to the tassels, they were blue. The cords that bound the tassels to the garment. The blue cords made the tassels conspicuous. Now in verse 41, God finishes up this blue tassel business by saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt to be your God. What's the big deal? Why does he mention, we all know that God brought the Israelites from Egypt. Why does he mention it here? I am the Lord your God. I am Yahweh your God. Why does he do that? Well, as the NIV Study Bible says, God is reminding Israel that he has the right to make moral demands on them. The reason he has the right is because he brought them out of Egypt and did all sorts of incredible things on the Exodus to keep them alive and to keep them free. And somebody, a God that can do what he's done so far, well, that God knows what he's talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Exodus chapter 15, verses 32-41, about the execution of a Sabbath breaker and the establishment of the blue tassels, both of which were designed to show the holiness of the law, the sacredness of the law, the importance of the law, the divinity of the law. And now we will continue with Israel's rebellion in our next audio, the first part of the audio, number 16, verses 1 through 24. We'll look at Korah's rebellion, part 1. I hope you stay tuned for that excitement, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.